My little nephew's been at mine. So he's here maybe 3 or 4 days a week because my brother and my sister-in-law, they're both, one's a dentist, one's a pharmacist. So they're going to work throughout this. And the nursery's shut and they obviously haven't put him back into nursery yet. So he's been at ours basically for the last few months, 3 or 4 days a week. And like, I kind of understand what being a young parent is like now. Like, they just don't stop for like 10 hours all day.
How old is he?
He turned 2 in July.
Yeah, there was a startup Peter Thiel was backing me. They're trying to take like teenagers' blood and give it to older people. And I was like, they need 2-year-old blood. Like,
Yeah, exactly.
the fountain of youth exists in a 2-year-old. It's there.
Welcome to PitchBook's Invisible Capital podcast, where we use data, research, and conversation to reveal important trends and issues in the private markets.
Welcome, everyone, to the Invisible Capital podcast, where we're devoting season one to examining the private markets by discussing the work of PitchBook analysts and writers during the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm Adley Bowden, head of our editorial and institutional research groups. I'm joined by Nalin Patel, our London-based European venture analyst today. Welcome, Nalin.
Thanks, Adley. Glad to be here.
Now, this is your first time on the podcast, so maybe if you could just give the listeners a quick intro to yourself, just a little bit of your background, you know, what were you doing before PitchBook, and then what you're currently focused on.
So before I joined PitchBook, I was at Goldman Sachs for just over 3 years within their London office, covering their merchant banking division and special situations group with due diligence for kind of investment banking transactions. I joined PitchBook in March 2019. So been here for just over a year and a half in the London team. And I primarily focus on the European venture capital markets.
So the European venture markets, Nalin, how are they doing? It was a fairly extreme first half of the year with COVID obviously really hitting, you know, in the Western world, at least mainland Europe and then UK before everybody else. Venture, though, in the reports that you published recently seems to have come out okay, a little less scathed than people might have thought.
Yeah, definitely. It was a really remarkable first half of the year, really, and a start to the year. European VC deal value registered the third largest quarterly figure on record in Q2 2020. It reached about 9.5 billion, which is quite a remarkable and incredible achievement considering COVID-19 and the fact that the majority of European countries were in lockdown for major parts of Q2. I doubt many people would have expected such strong deal value to occur in H1 overall as well. And also considering the strength as well, we're actually on pace to surpass the annual record that was achieved last year in 2019. And that is, again, like a really staggering statistic considering the fact that we've obviously entered recessions. There's been loads of job cuts, economic sentiments completely changed from 2019. And we think it's really in a good position at the moment, all things considered, and kind of the macroeconomic implications of COVID-19 across the board. We think this has kind of been down to, you know, tech-heavy businesses, the longer-term return horizons, you know, with regard to venture, as well as the kind of near-term illiquidity and growth in capital resources, you know, in recent years that we've seen in VC. So that's kind of, you know, what we've kind of seen so far this year in European venture.
You mentioned that 2019 was the strongest year on record. Was 19 a big jump from 18, or has the venture industry in Europe just been on a steady kind of year-over-year-over-year incline?
Yeah, it's been I would say over the last decade, it's really been a year over year, you know, increase, and it's been very, very strong. Each year has been gradually increasing. And this has largely been down to a combination of different factors. Mainly, we've seen a lot larger deals and a lot mature of an ecosystem in Europe. So deals over 25 million. This year have comprised around about 60% of the overall deal value. And that shift has really occurred during the last decade. At the start of the decade, it was generally pretty even between the financing stages, but we've seen a lot more capital and larger rounds being deposited into funds and then obviously funding startups themselves and kind of fueling that growth. We've also seen kind of, you know, the quantity of first time rounds actually decline steadily since around about 2014. And it is pacing quite lowly this year as well. So we've kind of really seen that shift in deal value being generated from larger follow-on rounds into more mature startups across Europe. And that's also been reflected with the median VC deal sizes across all stages in Europe. So it's not just the late stage rounds that are really seeing huge increases. Even the angel and seed and early stage rounds, they're getting larger as well. And they're also pacing really strongly this year, considering COVID-19 and have gradually increased over the last decade as well.
So do you think it's the maturity of the ecosystem now with those late stage rounds, it's really helped bolster our 2Q and 1H rounds?
Yeah, I think so. It's a lot more of a mature ecosystem than it was a decade ago. It's more robust. There's a greater combination of sectors that are creating the value as well. We've seen a lot of cash-rich tech entrepreneurs and investors not shy away from late-stage rounds this year so far. Amazon's investment in Deliveroo finally closed this year. And, you know, we've seen other large startups such as N26, they kind of conducted an extension of their round this year as well. So we've seen these really mature unicorns attract sizable late stage rounds within the ecosystem, ultimately meaning that deal value has then benefited and you know, been larger and larger year on year.
One thing we've covered on the podcast have been, you know, some of the sectors that have really been buoyed by COVID-19. What have you seen in Europe?
So there's been kind of real winners and real kind of not losers, but unfortunately kind of, you know, challenging sectors that have, we've really kind of emerged from COVID-19. You know, sectors that have really struggled have probably been energy, tourism, high street shops. And you wouldn't traditionally, you know, associate venture capital or the VC industry with those sectors. And as a result, we think that is probably why VC has been so strong this year. Software startups, they account for around 30 to 40% of deal value they have done in the last 5 years. And it's been steadily increasing over the last decade. Similar to the kind of stage makeup of the deal value, software has emerged in the last decade and grown to really dominate, you know, the amount of euros that are being poured into startups. Obviously, within the broader kind of software umbrella, we've seen a lot of activity in cybersecurity, and especially because of COVID-19, remote working, online social activities and recreational activities have also boomed in the last 6 months, as well as kind of fintech. I guess pre-COVID was the largest subsector of software, especially in the UK and in London, attracting a lot of capital. And then other sectors that we've kind of seen emerge that, you know, a lot of people spoken about, you know, healthcare, biotech and pharma startups. Obviously, the economic impact of the pandemic is really being felt now, I think. We've seen, you know, widespread job cuts, restructurings, and a lot of businesses fall into financial trouble. And I think that a lot of investors and stakeholders will be looking at that and thinking that we need to prevent this ever happening again. You know, in the aftermath of the financial crisis, there were numerous fintech players that were founded. There was a, you know, a wave of financial regulations introduced. And we think that this is a public health crisis, obviously, and we think that there are going to be obviously a lot of changes to daily life moving forward to prevent such a severe economic as well as, you know, health impact to the globe as well. So those are the kind of sectors that have really stood out. And then within specifically the kind of VC ecosystem, food delivery has obviously increased in the last few months. As shops have been shut, restaurants have been shut, and we've seen a lot of supermarkets, grocery stores, really racing to capture that market share within different markets in different regions. And we see that continuing going forward. Also, with regards to kind of the pre-prepared foods and things like that, consolidation is kind of, you know, well underway. Earlier this year, we saw the merger of Just Eat and Takeaway.com, and the newly formed entity actually was looking to acquire Grubhub. You know, meanwhile, Uber Eats is, you know, looking to acquire Postmates. And although these aren't, you know, necessarily within operating within the European VC ecosystem, you know, market leaders will cause trickle down effects for startups, you know, within the ecosystem. We've got Glovo, which is Spain based, and Wolt, which is Finland based. They're both within the same sector. And we think that those kind of startups are going to be attracting a lot of attention, given the kind of scenario and the conditions we're currently in globally. And then the final kind of sector that we've seen a lot of talk about is mobility. So it's not just Ubers and taxis within cities. It's obviously planes, flights have had to be grounded, trains, cars, and micro mobility as well. So cycling and scooters. I think maybe last week, electric scooters were actually became road legal in the UK, which is obviously a massive step for the country because they weren't previously. And that just shows that governments are now having to adapt their policies and fast track regulatory changes to obviously cater to a new kind of COVID-19 normal of how we move around. And that's obviously going to create opportunities for startups in operating in existing markets, but also ones that are targeting new markets and new regions.
Is that path from sort of the regional upstart, country-specific, into kind of more pan-European platforms? Sounds like delivery is going that way. I think some of the ride-sharing has gone that way. Do you expect that to go for some of these other consumer businesses? Or do you think now might be different with late-stage available that some of these kind of more country-specific companies might be able to get to a larger scale?
I think with the obviously with technology nowadays and the internet and e-commerce, I think that that's definitely going to occur more frequently, kind of cross-border transactions and cross-border scale for particular business lines. We've seen obviously the benefits of startups not having to expand via brick and mortar stores. They can obviously create a website, create an online interface, and then that can then obviously be scaled globally, and you can access it from your own home and then, you know, get something delivered. So I think that those kind of businesses are definitely going to continue to flourish, especially because that is probably the fastest way to achieve scale and growth in the current climate. It's very difficult to, you know, kind of set up a new office and build a new kind of brand in a country that you don't have a footprint in, unless you've kind of got that online interaction and interface that people can kind of, like, you know, access quite easily and quickly. You know, it's not out of their way to kind of access something online and use it, because a lot of people are looking for kind of convenience.
Back to the report you released on just kind of 1H venture in Europe, you highlighted CVC investment and then non-traditional investment actually in the valuations report. It stood out to me as kind of remarkable that corporate venture did not drop off a cliff, given everything that was going on. Maybe you can unpack that trend a little bit for the listeners.
Yeah, we found that was relatively surprising as well, considering the kind of dashed corporate confidence due to COVID-19, and as a lot of reports of large corporations struggling with balance sheet, job cuts, things like that. So overall, VC deals with CVC participation reached $8.2 billion through H1 2020, and that kind of kept pace with the Terra records set in 2019. And we think that was largely down to the sectors that startups target within the ecosystem. So technology is fundamentally linked to VC, and it's arguably been the corporate sector which has been least hit by the pandemic. There's been a lot of reports and news around kind of the big five in the US, obviously, increasing their market capitalizations and becoming, you know, some of the most valuable companies in the world. And we've seen that kind of spill over into Europe as well. I mean, for example, there are a few deals that took place that kind of really highlight how CVC has been able to kind of like help startups, but also the corporate arms and corporate and underlying parent organizations. They're investing in the startups. BioCatch is a biometric cybersecurity startup, and they actually attracted investment from American Express. And they prevent, obviously, cyber criminals targeting individuals who are making payments online, you know, with added security. And like American Express used that software. And I think that that kind of investment demonstrates how, you know, underlying incumbent corporates need to continue to invest into their startups, you know, remain competitive, and keep abreast of any changes that are occurring within the market. There was another deal for Privatar, which are kind of a cybersecurity company as well that handle data collection and regulations. They attracted investment from HSBC as well. So big financial institutions obviously want to keep relevant, but also keep secure. And they want to definitely make sure that they're still keeping, you know, on track of emerging trends that are going on. And definitely, I think that's what's caused a lot of CVC investment, is underlying corporates have seen the synergies that can be created from investing in new startups. And during COVID-19, there has been a spike in, you know, fraudsters, cyber criminals that have been preying on individuals and companies. And this isn't new. This is something that's been occurring, you know, since the internet's been invented. And companies are definitely now placing greater importance on cybersecurity, as financial traffic obviously has increased in the short term, in the last, you know, 9 months, and we expect that continue in the long term. And then finally, another aspect of why CVC has been so strong is because a lot of these tech companies are generally cash rich, and they are able to invest, you know, primarily in software-based startups to remain competitive. And we feel that will kind of be the main driving force behind CVC investment. Obviously, as other sectors have kind of fared a bit worse off than tech in the last few months as well.
One thing we've seen in the US has been as CVC gets more active, non-traditional investors get more active, valuations tend to go up. It looks like in your research, a similar trend is playing out in Europe right now.
Yeah, VC pre-money valuations across the financing stages have demonstrated real resilience during COVID-19. We believe the valuations could still kind of fluctuate as the year kind of progresses, and they can kind of reflect the challenges that different companies and different sectors are facing at different stages in their life cycles. But on the whole, it's been really, really strong. And that's largely down to kind of the fact that obviously a lot of investments are tied towards late stage and software deals. And that's really where the sweet spot has been in the European VC ecosystem. And that's where valuations have really, really grown strongly in the last few years. And that's continued this year, despite business confidence, job security, growth forecasts and VC deal sizes. You know, recent VC deal sizes have remained healthy despite all of those factors that are still playing out in the market.
Yeah, it seems like you highlighted that median valuations along with deal sizes have both been going up in tandem, which is what you'd expect, they're being linked. So maybe there's not such a huge valuation premium or kind of multiples going up. It's also just sort of capital in means higher pre-money valuation. Sometimes you stack rounds. And then the step-ups, I think you had as flat or maybe increasing a little bit. 1.6 is the number that's for some reason in my head on that round-to-round valuation step-up.
Yeah, step-ups haven't really demonstrated the kind of, many may have predicted that there'll be a lot of flat and down rounds occurring in Europe. But that hasn't really been the case. There have probably been a few high profile ones, but generally speaking, a lot of rounds have been conducted as extension rounds, or they have been a higher valuations, and step-ups have remained healthy as well, especially at the late stage where you could potentially expect some of the inflated valuations to actually take a haircut. But generally speaking, step-ups have also been pretty strong this year as well.
Now, we can't talk European venture without talking unicorns. Unfortunately, unicorns are now sort of the bellwether for venture ecosystem success. You spotlighted unicorns in the valuations report. How many we have today? How's 2020 been on our favorite European unicorns?
the number is 53 as of H1 2020. We added 10 new unicorns in the first half of the year. So we're over half a century now. The aggregate post-money value has also been on a huge upturn this last decade. And that's around 95 billion so far. To put things into perspective, that is astonishing growth. At the start of the decade and up until around 2014, there were less than 10 unicorns in Europe. And that just shows just how quickly things have changed within Europe. Obviously, there are a lot more in the US and the value is a lot greater. But I think that speaks volumes of how the ecosystem has matured in the last 5 years at least. And that expansion has been a consequence of greater capital inflows into VC from expanding sources, whether it be non-traditional, which involves CVC, obviously pension funds, sovereign wealth funds, serial entrepreneurs, high net worth individuals. We've seen a lot more capital poured into the ecosystem. That has resulted in larger startups remaining in the ecosystem, achieving their unicorn status, and then obviously going on to become a multi-billion euro unicorn before they exit. And we've seen a lot more startups do that now rather than exiting earlier in the life cycle at a lower valuation, because ultimately there is less incentive and there's probably more capital options available to remain in the ecosystem and continue to go through their major growth phases and remain private for longer. However, we do believe that the rate it could taper, because of COVID-19. It is more difficult for startups that are larger to, capture growth opportunities. And given the current macroeconomic environment, it could become more challenging to, obviously, achieve that growth at such a rapid rate in the coming months or even years. Having said that, investors may want to capitalize on those incumbent unicorns that are there, that concentrate on longer term trends, or even those you know, younger, less mature startups that are focusing on trends that are new to the market, such as sustainability, health and well-being, e-commerce, we've already talked about. And all of these sectors could see larger investment and competition years to come, and they could be looking to now get ahead of the curve and really fund them strongly now going forward.
Yeah, the mark of the unicorns, kind of, I can't believe I'm saying this, but the herd of unicorns growing is, I think, something that the venture industry has learned to embrace, because it means that, yeah, that late stage startups are coming back to grow more in the private markets versus selling at sort of the first big offer. But it's still important that those unicorns, you know, do eventually exit, hit the public markets or big acquisition, and return liquidity back to the investors, back to the LPs, so that that money can continue to cycle. So did we see any good unicorn exits or just notable exits, you know, even if not unicorn status, during the first half of the year?
Yeah, so exits is a slightly different tale to deals and fundraising this year. I think that that is the one area that's probably reflected a little more of a muted sentiment, probably not just because of COVID-19, but, you know, throughout 2019 as well. The exit environment turned slightly. You know, there was talk of incoming recession. Obviously, we've kind of blasted past those predictions from last year because of COVID-19. But essentially, the exit market was cooling, and that's carried on into 2020. So it was a really, really slow start in Q1. However, the exits have recovered commendably in Q2. They reached 2.7 billion in Europe, which is a relatively strong quarter considering COVID-19 and kind of you know, how the economies were in Europe were performing. Exit value in 2020 is still on track to register the lowest figure since 2012. But we do think exit outlooks could brighten towards the latter half of the year as, you know, pent-up investor demand and a scarcity of events, you know, do generate interest. Because ultimately, as you said, investors do want returns on their investments, and people do want to kind of see the market move along and exits to occur. We don't expect, you know, several highly valued startups to rush for an exit, though. Obviously, as late stage and non-traditional capital has largely alleviated pressure to exit in the maturing ecosystem in recent years.
I think I saw one stat that IPOs were down pretty remarkably this year. Has that changed?
Yeah. So they are down. I think there's only been 11 this year so far, according to our H1 reports. But one IPO that did occur in Q2, quite interestingly, involved Norway-based video conferencing startup Pexit, which exited at a 350.5 million pre-money valuation. So what was innovative about their exit was that their IPO was conducted, you know, pretty much virtually fully. And they used their own video conferencing software for the meetings and the investor roadshow meetings that occurred across, you know, multiple different time zones. And what was quite neat about that was that obviously, as they were doing these video conferencing meetings, they were able to, you know, demonstrate their underlying functionality of their product to investors and obviously generate interest in their underlying product that has obviously, you know, caused the business to grow so massively. And they conducted a virtual bell ceremony, and it involved employees kind of ringing bell simultaneously on a video call. So that was quite a novel way to kind of adapt to the current climate. And we could see, you know, other startups following that trend, because ultimately, you know, huge amounts of time and costs, you know, were saved during the process. And we could see other startups follow suit. And we could even see more, you know, virtual listings or even virtual direct listings of tech companies taking place and growing in frequency moving forward. Spotify's DPO in 2018 was a huge event for the European ecosystem. And we could see more DPOs going forward as well.
To move forward along the capital life cycle, fundraising for venture funds, it seemed like the reports that this is another kind of surprisingly bright area. Now, a lot of those commitments were probably locked up ahead of the first half of the year, so maybe not, you know, super surprising. But still, you know, how did fundraising hold up in one half, and where do you think it's going to end up at the end of the year?
So VC fundraising, again, was another strong area for the ecosystem. In Europe, it totaled 7.6 billion halfway through 2020, and that's on pace to set a new record annual total. So it's definitely going to exceed kind of the 10 billion watermark, which has kind of been the kind of benchmark over the last few years. So again, really, really strong kind of performance in Europe. I think there's a few factors at play causing that. So one is the rise in specialist funds that we're seeing in Europe. So we're seeing a lot more, you know, healthcare focused funds or biotech and pharma focused funds, or even tech focused funds. And they've obviously are going to target basically startups that are creating solutions in those particular sectors, because they have identified, or investors and LPs have identified, that these are the funds that could potentially generate the greatest returns in terms of, you know, a sectorial kind of focus for their investments. And these, you know, specialist funds are actually attracting, you know, large commitments from a diverse pool of LPs. You know, obviously you've got the pension funds and sovereign wealth funds, but we've also got a lot of commitments now coming from corporates, so big pharma investing heavily into, you know, healthcare and biotech and pharma VC funds that are then funding new technologies, new innovations, new drug trials, things like that. Because ultimately they want to make sure that they are, you know, keeping, you know, understanding what's going on in the market, what's newly being created, but also making sure that they are kind of, you know, investing in the future and remaining kind of cutting edge and not falling out of touch with what's going on within the ecosystem, what's being created normally or newly even. And then also we're seeing the effects of essentially high net worth individuals or serial tech entrepreneurs, basically, that have founded their tech companies and now they're becoming investors. One example is, you know, Elon Musk. He was originally a PayPal kind of founder. Now he's obviously, you know, founded Tesla, SpaceX, that, you know, series of companies. Jeff Bezos, obviously, Bill Gates, you know, there's the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation now that's making, you know, huge humanitarian investments as well. So we're seeing a lot of the tech entrepreneurs' cash flows now being returned back into, you know, innovation. And that's definitely been a driving force behind fundraising values, not just in Europe, but globally as well. And we've also seen a lot of US VC investors, especially in the last probably 5 years, establish European-based offices and raise funds within Europe, which, you know, are going to be targeting European investments or looking at investing in European companies and then trying to, you know, scale them in the US. And that's probably probably kind of a contributing factor to that was probably the fact that the US VC market is obviously, you know, a lot more mature than Europe and can carry significantly higher, you know, valuations and premiums. And I think a lot of VC investors are now looking at Europe to see kind of what's available and if there is a better value in terms of, you know, investing in something in Europe and then bringing it over to the US to really scale it and supercharge it for growth.
Now, last question for you. You know, the crystal ball is probably a little foggy. Case counts are again on the rise with COVID-19. But what do you think the second half of the year holds?
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. I think a key consideration is how are economies going to perform when stimulus measures are being wound up. So our furlough scheme is going to be wound up pretty much in a month's time. You know, grants have kind of, you know, all been dished out now. A lot of the kind of loans, all those applications have gone through. So we're going to see the effects of the economic impact combined with the stimulus now being reined in to see what the true economic impact is. I think at the start of Q3, there were a wave of redundancies announced in the first couple of weeks. I think it could be a similar story at the start of Q4. The stimulus measures kind of, you know, are wound up and restricted. So I think that's going to be a major impact heading into the final few months of the year. I also think that the fact that localized lockdowns seem to be, you know, being reported in Europe on a daily basis, there are daily adjustments to quarantine rules for countries. And this is ultimately just going to disrupt plans for people. And this could create, you know, more uncertainty for, you know, investments and things like that, because people may not be able to get to a particular region they were planning on going to, you know, going and sitting down or meeting founders or, you know, visiting offices. There is the option, obviously, to do, you know, virtual due diligence. And I think video conferencing did really hold its own during the kind of lockdown phase and the earlier months that have occurred. But I still think that nothing can really recreate that kind of energy and vibe you can get from, you know, going meeting founders or meeting, you know, young employees and understanding the passion and the buzz around an office when you kind of look at a startup and, you know, see if you want to invest in them. So I think that's going to play a huge part as well in what particular regions could even attract VC investments. There may be regions that are shut off completely for, you know, physical meetings. And then the other factor that kind of is obviously at play as well is the vaccine race. Ultimately, there will probably always be some form of social distancing or restrictive measures until, you know, a vaccine is found and then mass produced and mass distributed. And I think a lot of investors, startups and operators are now looking at identifying, well, let's kind of plan until a vaccine is found, because that is when we're going to be returning to normal. So if it's going to be another 9 months or if it's going to be another 12 months, let's see how much cash we've got and how much cash we need to get through the next 12 months to ensure that we don't basically fall into financial trouble. And I think that may create a bit of certainty and a bit of, I guess, confidence within the market. If you tell someone that, yeah, okay, your business is going to be shut down for 6 months, they can kind of plan ahead and understand what they need to do to make sure that they can survive. But I do think that, you know, the fundamentals of the European VC ecosystem are pretty good. You know, software and tech has performed, you know, really well in the last few months. And I think that that is the real engine room behind, you know, investment in Europe. And considering we're kind of over the worst of the first wave, obviously winter is coming and the second wave could be imminent in Europe. We've already seen cases rise recently. That threat is always there. But generally speaking, considering how we performed, you know, there could be another dip. But, you know, we could also continue to charge on and set a new record at the end of 2020.
Well, thanks, Nalin, for joining, and all of our listeners out there. Highly encourage you to keep an eye out for his research on the European venture industry. There's going to be a lot of interesting updates, it sounds like, over the next 6, 9, 12 plus months.
Thanks.
As always, you can go to pitchbook.com/podcast for the show notes and other relevant materials. I'm Adley. Thanks for listening to this episode of PitchBook's Invisible Capital Podcast.